When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking Point after the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. And here's what's coming up on today's show. It was the first sprint race weekend of the season. We'll discuss if the format is any good for Formula One. We take a look at your comments on sprints as well, and then we will go into our driver ratings. And Oliver Harden will take us through his conclusions out of another busy weekend. For today's show, I'm pleased to say that my Planet F1 colleagues, John Wilde and Oliver Harden, are here with me. How are you both?
Fine, thank you, Henry.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. So, first sprint weekend of the season is under our belts, and we've had plenty of comments on how the sprint went. So, and we put out asking for your comments about the sprint itself and the format, because it's the second season that it's been going. And Ryan says he feels it works as long as it doesn't replace traditional qualifying, but every now and then it's very interesting. Colin says it doesn't work as a spectacle for me, as it diminishes action from the main race due to out-of-place runners finding a more realistic grid spot. And then Oil and Gas 007 on Twitter says no, it's an attempt by Liberty Media to Americanize F1 at the expense of real fans of the sport. So let's start with Ryan's comments then, saying that it you know, as long as it doesn't replace traditional qualifying, it kind of works. Like, John, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, really. I mean, I don't have any really particularly strong views about sprint qualifying, to be honest, other than I wouldn't want to see it every week, to be honest. I do agree with Ryan that the traditional one-hour qualifying aspect has to remain, and long may it continue. But sometimes it's, you know, it's nice to have a bit of sort of racing action on a Saturday, isn't it? Just to spice things up a bit. And but obviously there are definite sort of negative issues to it as well, and I'm sure we'll come onto those in a moment.
Yeah, Oliver, that's a good point, isn't it? The fact that part of the reason behind the sprint coming in was for the race going fans, so to have something to watch over the course of the whole weekend. But you know, I'm sort of tending to agree with Colin's point here, really, that it just resets the grid to type, really, because we had wet qualifying on Friday, and then it kind of felt like the sprint just maybe put the cars where they would have been. Is that fair?
Yeah, there's definitely a case to be made there. I think the grid looking at it on Friday night looks actually quite promising. I think many people would have been happy with the race starting, Grand Prix starting with that particular grid. And I did think the sprint gave those who underperformed in Friday qualifying, so the likes of Carlos Sainz and Sergio Perez, to kind of work their way up slightly. So it did kind of take some of the storylines and the themes away from the actual Grand Prix itself.
Yeah, that's another interesting point, John, isn't it? Because like the race itself, overall, it wasn't the best this season. Let's be honest. And you know, the sprint, those 21 laps, could they, if they were put in the main race, there could have been an argument to say that would have added to the event as a whole. No.
Yeah, I think you might be being slightly harsh on the sort of the entertainment value of the race yesterday. There were parts in the middle that I thought were a little bit on the dull side. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? It's you know, it's a balance, really, isn't it? In terms of what you get on a Saturday compared to the Sunday. Obviously, there was the weather was a feature as well, wasn't it? Maybe if the track had been dry, it could have been different. If it had been wetter as well, it's a difficult one, really. But you know, I think there is a place for sprint qualifying, just not too often, in my opinion, would be best.
Yeah, and there are a few people who sort of agree with you. Another John writes, I think it works for 3 to 4 races per season. Giselle writes, in track-specific cases, I think it works. But Lucy disagrees, saying all the sprint does at the moment is it add an extra 20-odd laps to the main race with a break in between. And Phil says it doesn't seem to serve a purpose. So, Oliver, it's something that really has split the fans, hasn't it? I mean, to be honest, last season I thought it would get more opposition, but some people seem to have embraced it.
Yeah, it is quite difficult to love at times, but as I wrote for the site last week, it had an undeniable effect on all three occasions it was used last season at Silverstone, Monza and Brazil. I agree that, you know, we wouldn't want to see regularly, but in terms of something to, you know, just spice up the action, give the race going fans more opportunity to see track time, competitive and relevant track time, I think it does have a role to play.
Yeah, someone's trying to put their voice in the background as well, John. But Formula One are looking at extending it to being 6 races per season. Again, they tried that this season, but that got negotiated back down to 3. Do you reckon 3 is kind of the right amount?
I wouldn't be averse to a little bit more of it. It is 3 out of 23, isn't it? So that's kind of an average of about 1 in 8 races. You could probably, there's probably leeway for a little bit more than that, I think. I think there's talk of 6, isn't there? I think I certainly wouldn't want to go above 6. I think probably somewhere between maybe 4, 5, 6 is about the right number, I would say.
Yeah, but on the point of the sort of Americanizing of Formula One, Oliver, I mean, that seems to be a slight running theme from European fans, or so-called more traditional fans of the sport anyway, and from the comment we got saying it's at the expense of real fans. But I feel that's a little bit harsh. Like, can't Americans be real fans of Formula One too?
Yeah, it's an easy stick to be at liberty with. I think you know, the sport doesn't belong to any particular set of fans. It belongs to everybody. So, yeah, I do find that quite an ignorant standpoint, really.
Yeah, and John, there's you know, to sort of round this off on in terms of the sprints too, like where do you stand in terms of how this affects the World Championship too? Because there are points now for the top 8, and it could either bring people closer together, but it could also reinforce someone's dominance, couldn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's certainly having a bigger impact than it did last year with points down to 8th place. But more the fact that there's 8 points now for the win rather than just 3. Obviously, Max Verstappen will be delighted it was a sprint weekend because he took the maximum haul, didn't he? So it's put him right back into the picture, closed the gap to Charles Leclerc. So, yeah, I mean, certainly from his perspective, he'll see it as a positive.
So let's move on to our driver ratings then. It was another busy weekend on track, and Max Verstappen took a Grand Chelem, Grand Slam, after Charles Leclerc took one last time out. It was his turn, and he's probably got the unique distinction of starting and leading every lap in both races. But let's start with George Russell, John. He made up 6 places at the start, and he got a 9 out of 10 in your ratings. Like, this, where do you stand on his weekend?
Well, it couldn't really have gone much better for him, could it, really? Because obviously we know the limitations of the W13. He was able to extract a lot more from it this weekend than Lewis Hamilton. Not for the first time, it has to be said. That's the third time in a row that's happened. In the end, he was clinging on to the 4th place, wasn't he? Because he had Valtteri Bottas. Memories of some 53 weeks ago when those two had that mighty collision, 200 miles an hour. And so I'm sure there must have been flashbacks going through both of their minds at that point as they were dueling for 4th position. But terrific weekend for George Russell. He's now 21 points clear of his teammate in the standings, and you know, that would have been a scenario that very few people would have been able to envisage, I think, at the start of the season, and not least because you know, they're picking up relatively few points each at the moment, because they're not competing for the wins. So a 21 point gap for Russell over Hamilton is very significant.
Yeah, and Oliver, there was, you know, general consensus before the season would start that it would probably be quite a bit closer between Russell and Hamilton than it was probably with Bottas. But there's that's probably quite unexpected, isn't it? As John said.
Yeah, it doesn't help. Obviously, the situation with Hamilton, obviously, he's been used to winning. He's won 81 races, I think, between 2014 and 2021. Suddenly finding himself fighting over, you know, the edges of the points with Pierre Gasly is very, very difficult for him to take at the moment. So Russell, you know, he almost kind of knows no different because he's walked into the team this season. He scored very few points in his time at Williams, despite that podium at Spa last year, obviously. And Russell, you know, he's simply getting on with the job, and I think it's much easier for him in Mercedes' current situation.
So next up, let's discuss Valtteri Bottas then. We've already touched on him, but an 8 out of 10 and eventually a P5 finish, John. That's just, you know, it represents a very strong weekend for him, but it almost felt like it kind of went under the radar during the race, didn't it?
I think he's almost his whole season has gone under the radar, Henry, to be honest. I think he's performing a lot better than he's really getting credit for. And I think he's just, if anything, he's being let down a little bit by a few mistakes from the team. There was another one yesterday at the pit stop where he was delayed. And but for that, I'm sure he would have been, you know, ahead of George Russell on the road and would have finished 4th. But also a bit unlucky at the start as well. He got caught up in that melee with Daniel Ricciardo and Carlos Sainz, ended up running into the back of Ricciardo, but he got away without any significant damage there. And it was another really good drive. And, you know, that Alfa Romeo is clearly a lot more competitive than it was last year. And Valtteri Bottas is making the most of it. And I think I also just wonder whether sort of the position he's in, he's almost gone back to sort of how he was at Williams before he joined Mercedes, as being a sort of a plucky upper midfield runner who's able to sort of carry the fight to the big boys every now and again, and maybe even snatch the odd podium. And maybe he just feels more comfortable in that position than under the pressure of the cauldron at Mercedes.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it, Oliver? Because he's arguably punched upwards in his time with Williams. And do you feel like he could be more comfortable doing that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point, actually. I think it's a question of perception, actually. No longer is he the kind of, you know, disappointing number two, slightly erratic as he was for so many years alongside Lewis at Mercedes. Now he is, you know, he has the momentum. He has that sense of kind of authority at Alfa Romeo that he wasn't granted at Mercedes, maybe in the same way. And he's really relishing the challenge of leading a team, I think, yeah.
And it also goes to show, John, that despite moving from Mercedes, that bad luck is still with him. I mean, at least he managed to get the tyre change this weekend.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was unfortunate what happened at the pit stop. But can you imagine, as he was closing up to George Russell, as I was saying before about the flashbacks they must both have been having, but he must have been thinking, I'd love to get past that Mercedes. And, you know, after his move to Alfa Romeo during the winter, just, you know, to finish ahead of both Russell and Hamilton would have been an amazing achievement for him. But, you know, given the form that both teams are showing, it could well happen again, you know, in quite a few races this year.
Now, Sebastian Vettel in the points for the first time this season, same with Lance Stroll, a double points finish for Aston Martin. I don't know how many of us saw that coming before the start of the weekend, but another 8 out of 10 from you, John. He had, like, Sebastian Vettel, he looked right on form this weekend, didn't he?
Do you know what? I gave him an 8 out of 10. You know, compared to Australia 2 weeks ago, it should have been 18, I think, the way things went so badly for Seb in Melbourne. But you know, great to see him showing, you know, his true form, really, and good for Aston Martin as well to finally get their season up and running. He didn't really do anything sort of spectacular this weekend, did he? There weren't sort of lots of overtakes or anything, but he kept his nose clean and, you know, brought home some points. And I'm sure that'll give him good confidence going forwards now.
Yeah, definitely. And both Vettel and Lance Stroll in the past as well, however, they've shown that they're extremely strong in the wet. And that kind of came to the fore again, didn't it, in Imola, especially because the rain is sort of the great equaliser in Formula One. And they look like they made the most of it out there.
Yeah, it's true what you say. Vettel has always been very good in the wet. I think it's that V style of driving that he has that really allows his speed to come to the fore in the wet conditions. I think his performance in Imola was night and day compared to what he put in Australia. And it's, you know, it's a shame that we don't see that Sebastian Vettel more often these days.
So lastly, let's discuss Lewis Hamilton, P13 finish. It's only the second time in about 9 years that he's actually been a classified finisher outside of the points. John, 5 out of 10 from you. It just really wasn't his weekend. And Toto Wolff actually apologised on team radio for the car he had to drive. But ultimately, it just looked like he got stuck where he was.
Yeah, I think in terms of the rating I gave him, it's really sort of in the context of his performance compared to George Russell. He just couldn't get past Pierre Gasly at all. It was like Monaco 2021 all over again, wasn't it? He just saw the back of that AlphaTauri for lap after lap and kept trying to sort of execute a move at the Tamburello chicane, but it wasn't happening. And you know, obviously another very disappointing weekend for Hamilton, especially seeing his teammates so far up the road as well. And, you know, that's not a situation that he's going to enjoy. It's just not happening for him in terms of he seems to be getting all the bad luck as well that's going at Mercedes. There was another incident at the pit stop again yesterday, wasn't there, where Esteban Ocon was released unsafely in front of him, almost put him into the pit lane wall, and that put Hamilton sort of back a couple of places, and it was never happening thereafter. So it was another bleak weekend for him, and you know, there's an awful lot of work to be done at Mercedes to get him back further up the order.
So following our driver ratings, Oliver, you've written your conclusions for the weekend, and the first one being about Charles Leclerc. I mean, got a 4 out of 10 in John's driver ratings, and again, the comments were quite split. So Naz said it's a little bit harsh for Leclerc, but the rest of them are okay. Whereas Victor Bravo said 4 for Leclerc, way too generous. True champions cannot afford such careless mistakes. And you've mentioned in your piece about Leclerc sort of being sort of self-inflicting pain on himself in the past, and that just happened again at the weekend, didn't it?
Yeah, we've seen it over the years before, ever since he his breakthrough season with Ferrari in 2019. He obviously crashed out of qualifying in Baku, and then last year obviously crashed out at the end in Monaco despite setting pole position. I think the start of the season for Leclerc has proven once and for all that I think he does have the talent of the best on the grid, the likes of Verstappen and Hamilton. I think the big question mark for him now is temperament and whether he can, eradicate those mistakes to string together a real sustained title challenge. I think, he's obviously made an incredible start to the season. He's built a very healthy lead. But I think also that brings its own pressure because now, Ferrari entered the season kind of hoping for a title challenge, and now they're almost expecting one, given the start to the season that he's made.
And John, given the pressure just not just on Ferrari, but the whole pressure of, the country of Italy being on Leclerc, I mean, that's only going to increase as the season goes on. Do you reckon he'll be up to it?
Yeah, I mean, what a place for it to sort of go wrong for the first time this season on home soil as well. I mean, it was the first time that he was actually sort of finding himself in a chasing position, wasn't it, during the race? He was trying to hunt down Perez for second and just overpushed, didn't he, and took too much curb at the Variante Alta and round he went and into the wall. So, yeah, I mean, Oliver's absolutely right. I think it is all about temperament with him, and it's a mistake that he has to get over very quickly. Otherwise, he could find that he's still 27 points clear in the standings. He could find that lead being eaten away very quickly by Verstappen.
And just a quick word on Red Bull as well, Oliver. I mean, every race that Max Verstappen has finished, he's actually won. Do you reckon we're sort of underestimating them? Because a couple more comments on Planet F1. Plucky Underdog said that was worryingly dominant from Max. I really thought we might have a Red Bull versus Red Bull situation up the front between him and Perez, but that wasn't to be. And then Hugo Agogo, great name as well, by the way. I think we're coming to a Red Bull Vettel era again for the next few years. I mean, I know they're right up there, but are we almost underestimating Red Bull?
Not necessarily, I don't think. I think, the conditions obviously played very nicely in Max's favour over the weekend. We know how good he is in the wet. Some of his best career performances come in the wet in those conditions. The standout for me in terms of Red Bull's performance over the weekend was that of Perez. He obviously got in front of Leclerc and really frustrated him. And I don't think we can underestimate his role in the mistake that Leclerc made in the end, because there was that amazing moment after the stops for slicks where Leclerc appeared to have jumped past Perez and into second, and then Perez braked on the damp patch of track to get past back into the Villeneuve chicane. It was really encouraging performance from Perez, and he's going to have an important role to play if Verstappen is going to put together a title challenge of his own.
And he really has looked strong at the start of the season, hasn't he, Perez, John?
Yeah, what I think in particular impressed me this weekend about him was his starts in both the sprint and the race itself. And the fact that he got ahead of Leclerc into second place yesterday gave Verstappen that buffer. And the Red Bulls were comfortably quick enough to stay ahead of the Ferrari. So, he's certainly delivering the consistency now that he didn't have last year, Perez. So, he's providing a really sort of strong second string to the Red Bull bow.
And while it was Red Bull's first 1-2 finish since 2016, which in itself feels absolutely bonkers, there was trouble on one side of the Ferrari garage through Leclerc. But unfortunately, Oliver, Carlos Sainz, he just had another weekend to forget, which, you never really see inconsistency from him. But for that to happen 2 weekends in a row feels very un-Carlos Sainz, doesn't it?
No, it does feel like the walls are slowly closing in on Sainz in terms of, his position as Ferrari's wingman. Going forward, he had obviously a terrible weekend in Australia, And, you know, I think, you know, they extended his contract coming to this weekend, and with the wet conditions, obviously he's always thrived in those conditions, going back to his Toro Rosso and even pre-F1 days. I think the stage was set for kind of a really good performance for Sainz this weekend, but he almost didn't give himself a chance crashing out. I thought it was very interesting. Felipe Massa was interviewed by Sky prior to the sprint race on Saturday, and he said he'd been to see Carlos and just told him to just calm down. And just let it all come. And I think there is a possibility of Sainz maybe overdriving at the moment, and the pressure only increasing with his own mistakes.
And now there's a bit of time to fester, almost, John, with a couple of weeks to think about it. That's not really going to help him, is it?
No, and I think what concerns me as well is that he's still saying he's struggling to learn the car, and if he keeps crashing out of races, I mean, it wasn't his fault yesterday, really. Was it Daniel Ricciardo went into him and put him into the gravel? But he's been saying for quite a few weeks now that he's struggling to learn the F175, how to get the most out of it, and how's he going to do that? How is he going to actually sort of master the car if he keeps, you know, getting no further than a couple of laps in races and crashing out of qualifying? It's you know, it's something that he really has to address.
That's it. And Oliver, like, how long do you reckon Sainz has to actually turn this around and get himself back into this picture? Because at this moment in time, he's absolutely nowhere near, is he?
Well, in terms of, he obviously has the contract, so his position in the team isn't going to come into threat.
Right, yeah, just about, yeah, this season, I mean.
Yeah, it's his standing in the team. I think, you know, the time's already passed, really. I think Leclerc's mistake yesterday will only encourage Ferrari to act more quicker in terms of solidifying that number one and number two role. I think Sainz can still have a very important role to play in terms of winning points for Sainz, but it's a question, really, if he's going to be accepting of that, really.
Now, moving on to Mercedes, we've already touched on Lewis Hamilton's poor weekend. And Oliver, you say that you're seeing sort of parallels between now with him and George Russell and 2014 with Daniel Ricciardo sort of being the upstart against Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, it crossed my mind during the race yesterday, and we've kind of touched on it already. But, you know, from where Lewis Hamilton has been over the last few years to suddenly being out of the points, it's really distressing for him. And we've already started to see occasional signs of tension. We obviously saw the footage of the heated exchange with Toto Wolff in the garage on Friday. It's a really, really difficult situation. It is reminiscent of when Sebastian Vettel's run of titles suddenly came to an end in 2014. On the other hand, playing the kind of Daniel Ricciardo role is Russell, who, you know, he does know no different. He's walked into a team, he has everything to gain. He's done a really, really solid job, and, you know, 21 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton already. It's a good reflection of his start to the season.
Yeah, and John, do you reckon this is a bit of a shock to Lewis Hamilton's system? Because, you know, in the interviews that he's been giving, he's effectively ruled himself out of title contention already. I mean, this isn't a Lewis Hamilton that we've seen for probably the better part of a decade, is it? Someone who's trying to fight to get back to the front. And he said the car isn't far off the sort of 2009 McLaren, which was probably the worst car he's ever driven. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, but like, Hamilton does seem like he's better equipped on a personal level, at least, to try and work through this, I think. What do you reckon to that?
I don't think his driving is as sudden. I don't think he's suddenly become a bad driver, put it that way. That's definitely not the case at all. It could well be that he's struggling to get, well, he clearly is struggling to get out of the car what George Russell is. So maybe there's probably just something about this car that doesn't quite agree with him, perhaps. I mean, the fact that Toto was apologising to him, saying the car was undrivable, you could see it porpoising in the race. It's going to play on anyone's mind, isn't it? I don't think anyone, you know, Lewis has never experienced anything like this in his career. You mentioned 2009, but was it ever as bad as this? I'm not sure, you know, sort of battling to even scrape into the points. It's, you know, it's such a remarkable change from where he was last year, you know, where he was in a two-way title battle with Max Verstappen, to suddenly have plummeted so far down the order. It's it must be very difficult to get your head around.
And being lapped, Oliver, as well. Do you reckon that's the sort of best illustration of how far things have gone wrong for Mercedes?
Yeah, it's just insult to injury, really, seeing Verstappen going past like that. I do think Hamilton, you know, there has been some talk that he's tried experimental kind of setups, and that's where he's been going wrong relative to Russell. I think he still does have small pace advantage over Russell. I think, you know, he outperformed him in Australia despite running a heavier car. There was talk of him running a lower downforce rear wing on Friday qualifying, which kind of only exacerbated his problems with the tyres. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are circumstances there. But, you know, as John says, he hasn't become a bad driver overnight. And I think the difference with his situation in Vettel's is in 2014 is that 2014 kind of exposed some lingering holes in Vettel's game, which he's never really eradicated. If Hamilton remains the driver he was last season when he was winning races and scoring so many pole positions. It's just now that he doesn't have the car to show for it.
So let's move on from Mercedes then. One final piece of sort of feel-good news in a way is Lando Norris's podium. I mean, considering where McLaren have come from in the last few races, Oliver, that's a remarkable result.
It is. I think many people were concerned for them after Bahrain, especially. You know, they made such a promising start to Barcelona testing, then it all seemed to go wrong for them. Norris is still, you know, he's non-committal when it comes to judging the full potential of the car. He obviously put the podium finish down to teamwork and McLaren's sense of togetherness to kind of eradicate their problems. But it was a very encouraging result, actually, yeah, for them.
Yeah, but you also said the sort of more evidence of maybe Daniel Ricciardo's decline, but I don't know if I particularly agree with that one this time. It's, you know, he was right alongside Norris for the sprint, so he was nearby. You know, they both started on the third row, and ultimately it kind of came down to just basically clipping the curb as to why he was out of the race. But are you sort of like more leaning towards those small moments, sort of deciding these little things?
Yeah, he's definitely improved this season compared to last year. Obviously, last season couldn't get any worse. He was way off last season. But he's almost become a driver who, you know, he's one to be wary of now at the start. The incident with Sainz, yeah, it was obviously where he touched the curb and he slid into Sainz. But it was also reminiscent of Mexico last season when he outbraked himself and, you know, smashed into the back of Bottas and spun him around at the first corner. It's these little mistakes that he's making, which are a little more worrying now.
Yeah, John, it's very not unlike Daniel Ricciardo to outbrake himself, seeing as he's probably the best person on the brakes on the entire grid, at least for the most of his career. I mean, what do you reckon he has to do now to, you know, to really take the fight to Norris, I guess? Because it's starting to look increasingly like Lando's team, I guess.
It is. I can see both sides of the argument that you're making there. You know, he has been showing pretty impressive pace. You know, as you said, he was sort of alongside Norris on the grid, but then the other side of it is the mistakes, isn't it? So, yeah, I mean, you have to wonder if we have sort of seen the best of Daniel Ricciardo in Formula One, whether sort of, you know, he's getting towards being on borrowed time. He's 32 now. He made a joke the other week about the Las Vegas race. We think it was a joke. It might not necessarily have been a joke about, well, I was going to retire, but I'll have to stay around for that one.
I'm still leaning towards joke, personally.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. But I know other people thought there was, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, he was being quite serious. Well, you know, being reasonably serious as well, that retirement could actually be in his mind. So, yeah, I mean, if things don't get better for him at McLaren, then that could certainly be a possibility, even at the end of this year, you think. But I still think there's some life in him. He's got plenty of races to turn it around. But, yeah, I mean, certainly Norris is the golden boy at McLaren, and another podium like he got at Imola last year. It shows that he's continuing to go the right way.
Yeah, and Oliver, just one last word on McLaren as a whole, actually. I mean, the team spirit within them looks so strong in recent years. I mean, how much do you reckon that would have helped them just try and make these small changes just to improve their car? I mean, they're still being very conservative, as you say, but they just look like they've got a great atmosphere there.
Yeah, they do. It's a credit to the atmosphere that Zak Brown and Andrea Seidel have created there. They frequently refer to themselves as a young team. I think that says it all about them. They're very ambitious, you know, amazing problem-solving abilities to get on top of the problems that they suffered in testing. And yeah, it remains to be seen how far they can go this year, but a podium within four races is a very good start for them.
Oliver, John, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you to you for watching and listening as well. Be sure to head to planetf1.com where you can read all of John's driver ratings throughout the entire grid, and the same for Oliver's conclusions as well. And we got a little bit of a break before the Spanish Grand Prix, but we will have an episode in between for you as well. Make sure you follow us on social media too, and just head to planetf1.com every day, and we have got you more than covered on the sport. Thank you very much for watching or listening to Talking Point again. I've been Henry Valentine. Speak to you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.